And we thought, wouldn't it be cool if we created something like a Deliveroo or a Just Eat for home chefs?
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. I'm going to start this episode with a little shout out to the brilliant Kathleen Sullivan-Garman, who put up a LinkedIn post about her favourite e-commerce podcast and put us at the top of the list. Thank you so much, Kathleen. We really appreciate it. Me and the team get so much joy when things like this happen. We just had to tell you about it and to say a big thank you to you too. So thank you so much for saying nice things about us on LinkedIn. And thank you also for listening. Cheers, Kathleen. Okay, so in this episode, this definitely fits into the inspirational side of life. We are looking at a slightly different type of e-commerce. We're doing marketplaces. We are doing food marketplaces, fresh food marketplaces, where products are made to order by home cooks to be eaten at home by the customers. Our guest is going to be talking us through bits and pieces from their startup journey, what the product is, how they came up with the idea. We'll also be talking about how they manage some very complicated, I guess, stock availability, you could say, why they chose to go to a custom tech stack. And they were also on Dragon's Den before their rebrand. So you may have seen them earlier this year on Dragon's Den with a different name for the business. They are now Flavors, but they recorded before they rebranded. So he will be sharing about why they rebranded and how that happened. But he'll also be sharing his tips for if you want to go on to Dragon's Den with some fascinating numbers about the impact it had on their business as well. So well worth, if you have any intentions of ever thinking of going on Dragon's Den, or if you're not in the UK, Shark Tank or whatever it might be called in your part of the woods, really fascinating takeaways he's sharing with us from that. So make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on the Dragon's Den bit or our guest's top tips and my own take on this episode. Shopify recently turned the tables on me and took me from interviewer to interviewee. Knowing as they do that the most successful retailers today are those that bridge the gap between online and offline and make it a seamless experience, Shopify wanted my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, particularly in the key areas of local selling, omnichannel selling, and cross-border selling. You can read my thoughts along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain, and Italy by visiting ecmp.info/Shopify and downloading the report. That's ecmp.info/Shopify. And now to introduce our special guest. Shabir Mokhtia is the co-founder and CEO of Flavors, a home delivery service for home-cooked food. Number 50 on the Startups 100 2024 list, they are growing fast. Founded in 2020, they now have over 100 chefs and over 10,000 paying customers. Hello, Shabir.
Hi, Chloe. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to find out more about the kind of the slightly different sector of e-commerce that you're in and find out a bit more about your Flavors story. But before we get into all of that, how did you yourself end up in the world of e-commerce?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So we started exploring problems for, you know, busy professionals, busy families, and, you know, realized that people don't have enough time to cook good, healthy food for themselves. So that's kind of led to the genesis of Flavors. And even back then, the entire home cooks or home chef industry was running in an unorganized way. But one of the bigger challenges there was that it was primarily, you know, you're paying the home chef with cash. So hence, we came up with Flavors, or it was initially called Cook My Grub, where we essentially did a digital transformation of that industry, bringing in online payments, e-commerce, and then later down the line, we added delivery as well to the service. So that's kind of very quick answer in terms of, you know, how I ended up in e-commerce. And now, you know, looking back 4 years, it seems unimaginable how people were still paying cash back then. Of course, this was all pre-COVID and things have changed. So we're quite fortunate to have come along on that trend and made the most of the opportunity.
So were you looking around actively for a business idea, or did this one just kind of hit you in the face, as they so often do?
It was a bit of both. So me and my wife, both busy professionals, we had children, and we actually had someone who'd come to our home and cook for us on a Sunday evening, which we'd then freeze and then consume through the week. Then we moved house, and we lost access to that chef. But we realized that there were people in the neighborhood, and we were specifically looking for people who could make good Indian food, because that's sort of what I've grown up eating. So we were looking for healthy home-cooked food, and we found that there were people in the neighborhood who were cooking Indian food. So we reached out to them and started using their service. You know, fast forward a few months, me and my co-founder Dinesh were sat in a pub, literally Christmas Eve 2019, discussing some of the challenges we were having in our lives and looking for problems to solve as a business idea. And that's when this specific problem came up, and we thought, wouldn't it be cool if we created something like a Deliveroo or a Just Eat for home chefs, enabling them to transact online, get rid of cash payments, and potentially add in a delivery service as well.
Cool. So it's kind of like what you've created is like, it's almost a mashup between the Just Eat delivery world and having a chef come around to cook your food for the week. Because if I'm right in saying the customer comes on, they order food, it's kind of like ordering ready meals rather than ordering a takeaway. Would that be a fair way to explain it?
Yeah, that's right. So we've actually pivoted the business to ready meals. But when we started off the business, it was ordering from chefs who are within a 5-mile radius of you. So what we found after running in that model for about a year and a half was that it's really expensive to manage your own delivery fleets. Mm-hmm. So we were looking at ways to utilize third-party logistics partners and, you know, bank on their delivery fleets. And that's when we decided to pivot. We went through a phase where we trialed the concept first, but then once we were convinced, we pivoted the business so that instead of ordering from a chef or a home chef who is within 5 miles radius of yourself, you're instead ordering, you know, we broke down all of the geographical barriers. So you could be sat in a little village in Wales, but ordering from, for example, the best Caribbean chef in London, or vice versa. So that's when we made the transition to ready meals. It's still the home chefs. It's still all beautifully home cooked. But instead of it being delivered on the same day, it gets chilled and transported in chilled packaging as a next day delivery, after which you heat and eat.
Got you. And you mentioned Wales and London there. I'm guessing your chefs are all over the UK. Are you purely UK specific at the moment, or are you going beyond those borders?
Yeah, so we're primarily UK specific, except the Scottish Highlands and Northern Ireland, because of delivery restrictions. That's where our logistics partners aren't able to do next day delivery. We have done some research in the state of Texas in the United States, and also run a little pilot in Mumbai and Bangalore, but we realized that that might be a bit too much for us at this stage. So we're firmly focusing on the UK with a view to exploring internationally in the near future.
Got you. And what does the team look? You know, obviously you've got chefs working for you, but other than that, what does the team look like in the business? And are you outsourcing anything?
Yeah, so the entire logistics side of things is completely outsourced. So we work with companies like Parcelforce Royal Mail, DHL, and then a few e-cargo bike delivery companies for deliveries which originate and terminate within the M25. So we're trying to be as environmentally friendly where possible. That's like a big part of the business, which we've essentially outsourced to third parties. But otherwise, within our team, we have a marketing consultant, we have a chef onboarding person, operations, customer service, and myself.
Got you. And have you found, as you've been growing the business, that the customer target customers are the customers you thought they would be. So they're people who had that same need for, you know, busy lives, want to eat better quality food, and were doing the cash payments method. Is it those people who are now your core customer base, or has that evolved since you started?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a mix for us. So like initially we started off with that kind of busy family as the key demographic. What we found specifically during the pandemic phase through 2021 mainly was that there wasn't any real demographic. Everyone was ordering because, you know, everyone wanted to try something new, and this concept really stood out as something quite unique and almost coming with a not on the high street type theme. Since then, what we found is, you know, that busy family audience that still stays as a core customer, but also people who like exotic world cuisines. So on our platform, we also have cuisines like, you know, Sri Lankan, different kinds of Caribbean, some very niche Indian cuisine, which you wouldn't find on the high street. And then even some more hard to find cuisines like Latvian and Hungarian. So we've found a lot of people who are world travelers and probably been to those parts of the world have come on our platform, found that those cuisines are being served, which are authentically made, typically by people who actually originate from those places. And they've also become one of our key customer demographic.
I always find it fascinating how a business's anticipated audiences always ends up being slightly different to the one they actually end up selling to. So I wonder as well, you mentioned about the rebrand. Did that come as a result of the shifting consumer base, or was that something else that led you to change the name?
Yeah, sure. So originally the business was called Cook My Grub. And really the idea was, you know, for busy people and busy families to be able to get daily sustenance meals from the local area. As the business developed, we realized that the true potential of the business was premium world cuisines, comfort foods, which weren't necessarily daily sustenance meals. So the original idea was to be more of a mass market, mid to lower price point brand. But as the business evolved, we realized we were more of a mid to higher end priced brand. And there was a lot of world cuisine as well. You know, the UK is culturally so diverse now with people of different ethnicities and different places of origin that, you know, we almost became like a home for a lot of those exotic world cuisines, which don't necessarily have a market on a typical high street. So that kind of prompted us to think further in terms of what's the best way for us to position the brand. And that's when we came up with, we were actually part of a business accelerator called Unrest as well at the time. And we worked with Uncommon Design Studios, who helped come up with the flavors branding. So you'll see rich, vibrant colors representing diverse world cuisine, and also the flavors brand itself sort of represents the flavors of the world which are available on the platform.
When you explain it like that, it makes so much sense, the evolution of the brand. And that's surprising. Well, I guess not surprising really if you're here in the UK, because like you say, we have a very diverse country really, and all those different foods. It making my mouth water just talking about it, to be honest. So let's talk tech. Stop my stomach from rumbling. I mean, building a marketplace is always complicated. You've chosen to go for a bespoke tech setup. What was the reason for doing that, and any kind of lessons or tips learned that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, sure. So when we were originally validating the model with a small pilot user group in our town of Maidenhead in Berkshire, when we looked around, the initial bit which we tried to do was try to shop around for off-the-shelf solution which would help validate the product. But what we found was majority of the off-the-shelf solutions were basically for restaurant type food production places. Because we were specifically going after the home chef market, we couldn't find anything for our early validation or our early pilot. Hence, we decided to build our own tech platform, our own custom-made bespoke tech platform. And the key reason for that was, with home chefs, unlike restaurants, they would like to choose when, what, and how much they can cook. And all of the restaurant delivery apps or the restaurant delivery marketplace platforms were, you know, here's your menu with 40 items on it. Here's the trading times on and off. So it was very much like an online ordering, just-in-time delivery of food. Whereas with the home chefs, it was, you know, much smaller menus changing pretty much every day. And the ability for the customer to be able to pre-order few hours or in some cases, even few days in advance. So hence we ended up going with the custom build. Yeah, I mean, so far, so good.
Yeah, I suppose you're in a quite an interesting stock position, as it were. So like a restaurant essentially has unlimited stock, I suppose. Whereas you're talking to home cooks who are cooking maybe not 7 days a week. They're certainly not sitting around waiting for the orders to come in, and they don't want to be cooking 20 different items, or, you know, on Monday when they can cook or whatever it is. They have a limited supply. It's quite a complicated setup, that.
Yes. So, you know, unlike restaurants where, as you mentioned, chefs, the cooks are there, and as soon as an order comes, they whip everything together, and within 10 to 15 minutes, 20 minutes, it's out of the door. The home chef market is quite different. Chefs would normally not want to, they don't, you know, they're not in their home kitchens all the time. So they work on a pre-order basis. So, I mean, I can probably give you an example. So, for example, if you took Chef Allison, Allison's only available to cook on Mondays and Wednesdays, for example. So she would put up 7 menu items on a Monday, maybe similar on Wednesday or a different number on Wednesday. She would typically want about 6 hours of pre-order time or for Monday and 24 hours pre-order time for Wednesday. So also Allison would only be able to cook from those 7 menu items, 10 of each. So all of that gets configured by the chef. It goes on to what we have is a chef app, and then that's what's visible to the customer. So customers can only ever order as much food as chefs can make. They also need to order before the pre-order window expires. So that way, the amount of food wastage is practically zero. Chefs also only ever cook as much as has been ordered. And then customers get, obviously, the benefit of a freshly prepared meal, which then gets delivered to their door.
It's a fascinating subject, and I can totally see why you had to go bespoke on the tech front. Shabir, there's something I have to ask you about before we, you know, move into the top tips, which is, you've done the Dragon's Den experience. I guess, how was it? Any benefits you've had from it, and any advice to anyone listening who's thinking of going down that route?
Yeah, it's been, you know, a remarkable experience for us having been on the Dragon's Den. I guess, like, you know, and from a timelines perspective, we almost shot our episode 9 months ago. And even that was after about a couple of months of due diligence from the production team at the Dragon's Den. And after having shot this in May of last year, we've waited and waited and waited until we finally got confirmation at the end of last year that we've made the final cut. Then we entered another waiting period where we weren't told which episode we'd be on. So we only got told 2 weeks before the actual airing date which episode we'd be on. But once we knew we'd made the cut, we started prepping for it, and we saw nearly 100,000 customers on the website on the day the show aired. And it tripled our sales for last month and this month. And it's been really game-changing for us, because with a consumer business, you're only as good as the number of customers you have. And the number of customers you have is totally proportional to the number of people who actually know about you. And typically as a business, we would spend hundreds and thousands of pounds on doing awareness campaigns on Facebook, Google, etc. But this gave us that one-shot access to nearly 4 million people in the UK at prime time, tuned in and watching our pitch for over 10 minutes. So it's almost like, for an early stage startup, it's almost like a money can't buy type of exposure. For anyone considering going to the Dragon's Den, I would highly recommend to go on the Den when the time is right. And by that, I mean, you need to be operationally geared up to be able to support, you know, the large influx of people who first and foremost come to your website to check you out and then potentially place an order. So you shouldn't go there, I would say, probably in the first 6 months of you trading, or even the first year of trading, once you're a bit experienced, but you're not big, because ultimately the dragons would only invest in you as kind of like an angel investor type profile, so maybe £100,000. So when the timing is right, that's when you go on, you try and go on to the 10. And if you do end up making it on there, make sure your pitch is interesting enough and it's TV worthy, and ultimately enjoy the experience there. Whether you get the investment or not is slightly immaterial. The most important bit is that you come out looking credible.
E-commerce Masterplan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Shopify recently turned the tables on me and took me from interviewer to interviewee, knowing as they do that the most successful retailers today are those that bridge the gap between online and offline and make it a seamless experience. Shopify wanted my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, particularly in the key areas of local selling, omnichannel selling, and cross-border selling. You can read my thoughts along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain, and Italy by visiting ecmp.info/Shopify and downloading the report. That's ecmp.info/Shopify.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Shabir, are you ready for the top tips?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So one of the books which was quite fundamental for us at Flavors in the early days was a book by Andrew Chen called The Cold Start Problem. So in that book, Andrew talks about his early days at Uber and how they managed the supply of drivers and riders, and you know how you need to go about it if you're running a two-sided marketplace. Great book, and certainly some great tips to be had from it.
The holy grail of marketplaces. Did the chicken or the egg come first? That sounds like an absolute must read. So love that recommendation. The traffic top tip, which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think email marketing, it's been there forever, but for us, it continues to be one of those things which drives probably the highest amount of sales. There's some great tools out there as well for email marketing, which if you look at the more recent ones, they allow you to do segmentation in a very intelligent way.
Always love a recommendation of that. That's brilliant. Thank you. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Sure. So I think, you know, really as a direct-to-consumer e-commerce proposition and being quite, I would say, like an unusual experience where we've got chefs with specific days where they're cooking specific things, it's really important for us to understand how users are using our service. You know, where are they getting stuck? What's stopping them from completing their order, etc. So we use a tool called Microsoft Clarity, which, as it says in the name, gives you clarity about the customer experience. And then that allows you to then make tweaks on the website or in your user flows, in your journeys, to ultimately make sure that placing an order is dead simple for the end user.
Nice. Not one I've heard of. So I'm going to have to go and have a look up of that one afterwards. So that's definitely a top tip. Finally, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I think recyclable packaging is something which everyone should try and adopt as much as possible. I can give you our example. We went from using silver foil based insulation to using corrugated paper and wool-based liners. So trying our best to reduce our carbon footprint where possible.
Wool is an impressive product for insulation, isn't it, when it comes to becoming that bit greener?
It's fantastic, yeah. And typically, you know, regular insulation liners would keep food fresh for 24 hours, but with wool, it extends it out to nearly 48 hours. So in case of delivery delays, etc. as well, it helps preserve the food for much longer. Plus, it's super eco-friendly as well.
Yes, super eco-friendly. Right, Shabir, thank you for all of those. That was brilliant. Before we say goodbye, though, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social if they want to get in touch and grab some of your lovely food?
Sure. So we are on flavours.uk. That's flavers.uk. And similar on social media as well. So if you're looking for a lovely home-cooked meal, finish off your day, or for a Friday night, maybe even a curry night on Friday, then please head to Flavours and give us a thumbs up.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Shabir. It's been fascinating learning about your alternative type of e-commerce. And also, those Dragon's Den tips were superb. So thanks for telling us all about that too.
Thanks, Chloe, and thanks for having me on the show.
What a fascinating business. Loads to learn, or loads kind of to be inspired by, I think, from that one. I think their approach to the tech is clearly, tech and inventory is really fascinating. And I love how they've pivoted the brand. Plus, if you are thinking of going on Dragon's Den, how fascinating was that? I guess for me, the two big things with that from that would be, one, it takes a while. You have no control over when it happens. So just be ready. And two, think of the TV audience almost before you think of the dragons with what you actually do whilst you're on there. Truly fascinating. And of course, for any of you in other countries where it might be called Shark Tank or something else, I'm sure those tips will suffice for you too. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to what we've mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast. You can also use our special direct episode short links. That's ecmp.info/the number of this episode. And that will take you straight to the right page on the website. When you get to the website, do make sure you add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. And if you like this episode, make sure you check out our other startup episodes, ecmp.info/startup, to find out more about businesses who are in those early stages of learning and growing and hacking and amending and all that kind of good stuff we've just been chatting about. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners just like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week. Don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
Don't forget to download Shopify's new industry report featuring my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain, and Italy by visiting ecmp.info/Shopify.